Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, it's Jonathan Goldhill, and welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. And today I have someone coming as a guest from an entire another continent. Nike Anani is located in Lagos. Did I say that right?
Lagos.
Lagos, Nigeria. Sorry. And very interesting lady here. Nike helps her clients bridge the gap between the senior and younger generations. As a result, they communicate, collaborate, and collectively gain clarity to increase profit and productivity in their family businesses. Sounds a lot like what I do, Nike, but Nike's got over a decade of family business expertise in Nigeria. So we're going to talk to her about her experience there. Nike helps owners lead their family organizations to long-term impact and legacy. Her inside experience as a second-generation family business owner birthed a passion to help other families in building legacy enterprises that would outlive them. So she and I share a very similar passion for helping second-gen family business owners. She is doing it more with women and family firms, and she's really interested in the rise of African multi-generational businesses and wealth, minority-owned businesses, and immigrant communities. Nike, welcome to my show.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. I'm excited about this conversation.
Yeah, I feel so honored to have someone from your country on my show. I've been so domestically focused, and so many of my clients are in the construction and contractors field. So let's just have a conversation about what your business background was. But before we get that, what's the family firms in Nigeria? Are most businesses family owned? Do you have any data you can share with us?
Yes, most businesses are family owned, as in most other jurisdictions. So over 90% of our GDP is private sector led in Nigeria, and over 93% of indigenous businesses are family businesses. But a lot of them will stay at the entrepreneurial level and fail to transition from founder-led business to siblings partnership and beyond. So 98% of them will die when the founders die, unfortunately. So we have a huge issue of just single generational businesses. And a lot of the work that I do is to try to help folks to overcome that and be able to build legacy enterprises.
That's great. So, well, you are obviously very well spoken. And you sound like you've got a bit of English educational schooling in you. Tell us
a little bit,
right? So you were raised from 9 till like 25. You were in the UK.
Yes, I was. So born in Nigeria. At age 9, my mum, my brothers, and I, we moved to the UK for our education. Because unfortunately, it's the reality that the education system on the continent is still severely behind her global counterparts. And that's the same decision that we were having a conversation prior to our recording that my husband and I came to as well. We'll be moving our kids to Austin, Texas in a couple of months. So moved to the UK, went to university there, and I studied economics at uni. And we would visit Nigeria because my dad was still here building the family business. And I was always very moved by the extent of absolute poverty and relative poverty on the continent. But I didn't really know how and what role I had to play in that story, in reversing that trend, right?
So we want to hear about that. We want to hear, but what was the family business that your dad was involved in building?
Interestingly enough, would you guess? Construction.
Okay. So not too dissimilar from the U.S. family businesses. So I know you're interested in tech. And if you're moving to Austin, you're going to love the music and the tech scene there. But, you know, the family businesses are mostly in unsexy industries like construction and real estate and property management. They're not in tech so much.
So. I know. And that's kind of, interestingly enough, that's grown on me. I wouldn't have, by choice, have chosen to build a business in construction. But now, having been back in the family business for 10 years, mm-hmm. I told you I came back to Nigeria 10 years ago, and I've been working very, you know, very hands-on in the business. I've actually grown to like construction, real estate, infrastructure. So moving to Austin, I'm quite excited to see what opportunities there are, particularly from a social entrepreneurship perspective. How can we provide or create projects for affordable housing for marginalized communities that traditionally haven't been able to build generational wealth? Because house ownership is a critical tool to be able to build wealth. So that's something that is on my radar, as well as tech and sexy industries. I do quite like construction, real estate.
Well, you sound like a mission-driven kind of entrepreneur, like as I am. And there's a huge need for housing among the unhoused in the United States. I don't know what the homeless situation is like in your country, but in our country, it's getting worse every year. And this pandemic has been devastating to the rise of homelessness. And, you know, they're starting to build some unhoused units. So maybe there's some opportunity. But so tell us a little bit more about your family business. What was your role in it? What was it like when you started? Where is it at today? Mm-hmm. Where does it go from here also?
So my father was a medical doctor by training. So when he set up the business, it wasn't a construction business. He was supplying medical consumables to teaching hospitals and labs across Nigeria. And Nigeria went through a transition from military rule to democracy in 1998. And with that transition came a lot of social development, building of schools, hospitals, a lot of civil works. And he had built relationships with government over the years. And so there was a tilt in our strategy away from just medical consumables, medical equipment, to more designing construction of hospitals. And then over the years, that evolution then became, my father's very, very entrepreneurial. And he spotted a lot of opportunities for not just schools, hospitals, but also road projects, fertilizer plants, oil and gas projects. So now today we are really deeply involved in really complicated infrastructure projects.
All right. So let me just interrupt for a second. So when I was in business school getting my MBA, studying from my entrepreneur professor, he talked about something he called the corridor theory of entrepreneurship, which is as you go down one corridor and you're thinking that the destination is the room at the end of the corridor, but suddenly you take a turn into another door and another corridor opens up and it's a much bigger room and it's got much bigger opportunities. And that theory, I think, is a great theory. And your dad was living that. It was just like this thing led to that thing, led to the next thing. And innovation is so important, you know, to be able to constantly, you know, to have that entrepreneurial talent. Like, not everyone has it and not everyone needs to have it, because we need people who can lead and people who can manage and people who can do the work. So, so how large is your family's business today in terms of maybe headcount or?
Yeah. So in terms of headcount, we're at 2,000 members of staff.
Wow.
At a peak when I first moved back, we were bigger, we were at 3,500. But Nigeria went through a recession, interestingly, 3-4 years before COVID, and then COVID hit again. So we downsized somewhat. So we're relatively big. We've got locations across the country, 5 locations. We're still one country focused, but seeking to expand internationally, particularly to neighboring African countries and countries that have oil and gas projects, because we've built up an expertise and core competence in that industry.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at that projects in Angola, Mozambique, and so
PK, what a great story, and what an interesting story. So I had the pleasure of working with a family business here. It was an e-commerce company, and I was called in by one of the brothers who was an EO, which stands for Entrepreneurs Organization member. And he said, my family's having some difficulties. My sister started the business, and I went in and started to do some work. And I used the 5 dysfunctions of a team, Patrick Lencioni's book. I'm sure you're familiar with it. Most coaches are, and started to uncover some of the trust and conflict and commitment issues. And it turned into quite an experience with this family, where I had to work with the brother and sister so they could come to a resolution. But what was really interesting to me was the mother and father were from different countries. One was from Kenya, one was from Nigeria. And apparently there's quite a cultural history between those two countries. And the father was living abroad in Africa while the mother was here in the US. And so I bet you've experienced quite a lot of cultural challenges and conflict. And tell us, you know, how that's played out either in your family business or how you helped companies deal with some of those cultural challenges.
Mm. No, Africa is a complicated continent, and Nigeria alone, we have 200 million people and 250 ethnic groups, 250 distinct ethnic groups.
Wow.
And so obviously that comes with its challenges in that, looking at the history of Africa, we were very geographically dispersed, and there was very little, to some extent, limited cooperation across tribes. Because Africa was so fertile, a lot of tribes could sustain themselves. And there was little cooperation between tribes. And then colonialism came and forced interactions between groups that traditionally didn't get on or didn't even have to get on. And so today, with this huge amounts of diversity in terms of the tribes that we're from, there's, as in any country, there's lots of stereotyping of tribes. And we tend to have low trust societies, unfortunately. Mm. And that can contribute to a lot of conflict. I've seen it in business. My father's very atypical in the sense that he's always promoted diversity of thought. And so a key strategic consideration, if we're recruiting a key member of staff or a board member, he wants to see representation of all the geopolitical zones of the country.
That's
so
great.
He'll say, we need someone from South-South, because someone from South-South will be able to help us with community issues in this area as we're looking to expand the business into this area.
Well, he sounds like a real bridge builder, by the way, literally and figuratively speaking. and we have those same types of problems here. So I work with a lot of construction companies, and there are people that come from mostly the Latin countries, Mexico, Guatemala, Colombia, and there's like a pecking order for like if you're from like Mexico, from the city versus from the rural versus from the suburbs, like there's a pecking order. And there's a lot of family members are working at the same companies, and this family won't work with that family member, or they're very clicky. And so it's quite challenging. Sounds like you got your dad, you and your family has become pretty adept at dissolve those boundaries a little bit.
My dad has always been a model for diversity for me. He, even in raising me, my mom and dad never made me see my gender as an obstacle to anything.
Great.
And so, for instance, I'm the only, well, soon I'll be leaving in 6 weeks, sad face. I'm the only family member aside from dad working in the business. I've got two younger brothers. And, you know, in a lot of households over here, the people often will question, where are your brothers? Why, you know, I would say to my dad, where are her brothers? You know, why does she have so much power? But for him, he never saw gender, age, race as an obstacle. So I guess that's been my, the backdrop and the context through which I've been brought up. And so I've always celebrated diversity, always wanted to have friends from different cultures, whether it's within Nigeria, like I said, it's very diverse, interestingly enough, Africa as well as a continent.
I'm sure.
And even on a global level.
I imagine it. I imagine it must be bittersweet for your dad to have his daughter leaving to go to the US and leaving his family's business. And maybe, and so the brothers are not coming into the business. They're not interested in the business, and, well, they must be doing some terrific things on their own, hopefully, but.
Interestingly, we will all be out of the country. So my middle brother's moved to Mozambique. My youngest is moving to the US as well. So yeah, it's a huge season of transition for the family and for the business.
And are there grandchildren either in the future or in play for your dad? And where, how will he, or, and maybe your mom's still alive and in the picture, like, how will they visit these grandchildren living so far away?
So I'm the only one that's contributed my quota. I've replaced my population with me and my husband. We've got two.
Okay.
And my brothers are still single. But you know what? Houston's a huge oil and gas hub, and a lot of Nigerians, there's a huge Nigerian community there. So my dad typically is in Houston three or four times a year.
Wow.
And we'll just be a couple of hours down the road. So we'll see him. My parents are still very young. My mom will be 60 later this year. My dad will be 60 next year. Mom has already said she'll be spending half her year with us because her and the grandkids they're inseparable.
Of course.
They're on FaceTime like three times a day, and my mom lives 2 miles away from her.
That's great. I love it. Love the story. And so your dad built this business from the ground up?
Mm-hmm.
Really? That's very
first
impressive.
Gen. So he was a medical doctor. My grandparents were both corporate workers. My grandfather works with Total. He was the first Black director for Total Oil and Gas Company in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
He retired and then set up his own oil and gas servicing company, which he ran until he passed away. My grandmother worked in public sector for many years. So my father was the first generation of entrepreneurs in my family.
That's remarkable. And so without telling us or, you know, I mean, he's got to be thinking about succession at this point now with you not there. Can you give us some hints as to where he's leaning? I mean, is it probably just going to be an exit at some point? Because, you know, unless you're coming, are you coming back?
I don't think so.
Okay, I don't think so either.
It's a permanent move. I think we've been very, with a lot of the work that I've been doing, I trained up as a certified family business advisor 3 years ago and started really helping the family with succession planning and family governance to gain that clarity, you know, communication and collaboration that I help my clients with. And we did a lot of work in building the rudimentary foundation, such that we're in a very high growth phase of our business. My father's very aggressive and entrepreneurial. He builds probably a business a month, has a new idea a month. Not all of them fly, but some stick.
Wow.
And as I said, we're aggressively pursuing international expansion as well. So how the business will pan out in the future is not very clear, but we do know there's two options. With my exit, we already had a lot of non-family staff that had significant responsibility. Corporate governance is now a key focus for us as a business. And so that gives us two options. Either non-family staff will succeed as a future leaders in the CEO's seat, whilst we are board members. We have a mixed board of family members and non-family, and or we sell in the future. But for now, like I said, Dad is not 60 yet. He's still, he's got his eye on the ball.
He's vital.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know. I'm hearing that the voice of when the United States astronauts landed on the moon and reported back to Houston like we've landed. It feels like you guys are really going to like a whole other continent, and you know that you're going to be reporting back to base station that, you know, we've got opportunities here and the business is expanding and we're now a global business. What a great success story. So we have challenges in this country. I'm sure you have the same of keeping businesses lasting through the third generation and fourth generation. And you're passionate about multi-generational businesses, and especially I'm sure with your heritage, you know, in Africa. What do you think is the secret to creating multi-generational family business and wealth in Africa? I mean, is it education? Is it entrepreneurship training? Is it, what are some of your thoughts on this?
All of the above, but I will sum it up in collective wisdom, collective knowledge, collective learning. And, you know, quite often we'll cite the statistics, a business failed after a generation. But when we look at a lot of entrepreneurial families today that have built multi-generational businesses, it's not usually one business that is in the enterprise. Some may have fallen down the wayside along the way, but others stuck. So I think it's really, really important that families are able to, say, like my father, impart the knowledge, the expertise, the ability to be able to build and nurture businesses to the next generation. I think that's the greatest legacy of all. So that the next generation can be on their own two feet, be able to create and multiply businesses, because the rate of the family is growing faster than the rate of the business. Typically in my side of the world, we populate quite quickly. We're the fastest growing continent.
That's an interesting concept, folks. Like, the rate of the family is growing faster than the rate of the business. And in my words, I used to say that, like, in a next gen business, if siblings are coming in, you know, you've got let's just say it went from one family of a father, mother, founder, and now two kids are coming in. Now there's like potentially three families. And can the business triple in size to support the three families? So, interesting concept. And you're saying that the population growth is faster in your country than maybe here. So, so it's even exponentially.
It's more important. So there's the need to have that mindset, that strategic mindset as a family. We need to be cultivating new businesses. We need to be expanding the borders of our business, whether it's through new products, new services, new geographies, new investments, new JVs and what have you. But beyond like the business side of things, you touched on a really important point, which is the complexity of the family over time. As families, over time, you have new entrants, you have exits, unfortunately, you might have divorces. Over here, we have polygamy. Polygamy is very common. So all these complexities of the changing family necessitate that governance is absolutely critical. And governance is such a heavy word. For the longest time, when I would hear about governance, I was just like, do we really have to? This sounds incredibly boring. This sounds like a distraction from making money.
Bureaucratic, almost. It's like we're going to turn this corporation from an entrepreneurial company to a bureaucracy.
Ugh. This is it. And I think every entrepreneur hates the concept of slowing down the business with paperwork and process. Ugh, what's that? Want to go after the opportunity.
Right.
But I think it took me a while and I had to reframe my mind to see that it wasn't about bureaucracy. It was about creating a process through which collective decision-making could be made with the family, a platform through which we could have considered conversations about what is all of this about? Where are we heading? Like you were kind of alluding to with the corridor.
Theory of entrepreneurship.
Yeah, like families have decision overload. There's so many possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
You can. There's so many industries you can go into, but how do you distill the opportunities that are right for you? What is the purpose of all of this? What are our values? And then beyond that, what's the compelling reason for us to stay together as a family and business? Or what's the compelling reason for us to stay together as a family that invests?
Well, these are like important questions, and you raise the issue, and I talk about it in the early chapter of my book about the requirement to innovate products, processes, business model, or you know, expanding into new markets. And this is challenging for a lot of G2, second generation entrepreneurs, because that entrepreneurial gene is, it's not something you, like genetically linked. It's something you sort of either have or don't. And mm-hmm. a lot of G2s don't necessarily have it because they saw how hard their mom or dad worked and they're mm-hmm. like, I don't want to work like that. So I think that's one of the reasons that family businesses don't make it into the multi-generations. And the other is that the third generation maybe was very spoiled and they became entitled and they don't have to work very hard. It's just everything was mm-hmm. handed to them. So they don't have that drive, that desire to innovate. These are some really interesting challenges that we're all presented with.
Mm. Indeed.
So you have a consulting business now, or that you're going to launch, I take it. Probably won't. It's already.
I've been running it for 2 years now.
Okay. And what's the focus of that business? Tell us about that.
My jam is building bridges. The irony, and no pun intended, mm-hmm. between generations and family firms. What I often see is there's a disconnect, there's distance and dysfunction between Gen 1 and Gen 2. Because like I said, context over where I'm from is businesses are first generation businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And founders are grappling with, they want to let go and move on to other things, but they just find it really difficult to let go. And there's no one to grab on because oftentimes over here, a lot of next gens are not even in the country. They live in Canada, in the US, in the UK, and pursuing their own lives.
Right.
And on the other side, you've got the next gens that are pursuing their own lives, but have a voice and want to contribute their voice to be able to shape culture in the business, contribute new ideas on how to innovate, on new opportunities, whether it's using tech and what have you, but find it very difficult to get a word in. And all of this creates, you know, impediments so that both generations can come together and collaborate, communicate, and gain that clarity. I think governance should achieve those three things. Once you've achieved those three things, the documentation can come afterwards. So I don't see governance as a constitution. I see governance as a process, the bringing together of the family.
And so that is the primary focus or one of the primary focuses of your work? And so who makes the buying decision? If someone's listening here and thinking like, this sounds interesting, I'd like to put this in place in my business, but my dad will never go for that. I mean, who makes the buying decision? Or is it a group?
Interestingly, it's usually the next gen.
Yeah.
So the next gen comes and says, they drive it. Everything you said completely resonates. This is where we are. We need to move this business forward and start to structure properly. And the dad or mom is just not letting go. and they become the change champion in the family business. They then, you know, impress it upon their parents that this is critical, this is important, and then we start the process. Sometimes the founders are not really interested in the program and will then say, you know, work directly with the next gen. And so I essentially coach the next gens to become like me, to be able to understand how to be a change agent, to be able to start to, you know, hold space and start to facilitate conversation within the family. And other times I've done engagements where we do siblings formations. So working not just with that individual next gen, but with all the siblings, because moving from gen one to gen two, like you kind of alluded to, you're moving away from founder driven business or couples driven businesses to siblings led partnerships, even where they're like me and my brothers, where we're not working in the business, but we do take decisions together. And that forming of a team, that cohesion, it takes practice, it takes intentionality. It doesn't happen by osmosis. Ideally, you want to really form that team during the life of the founder. Interestingly enough, the coming together of the team usually helps the next generation with winning over the founder with their ideas.
I think that's really interesting. And I think it's important for our listeners to understand that. So there's a management team, there's a ownership team, there's a leadership team. The leadership team, the management team, for obviously those might be different. The leadership team and the ownership team might also be different. There's probably some overlap, but the owner's team and also the families, like the family is a different group as well. So there's all these different stakeholder groups, and because they might be family members that are not owners but are impacted. There are, you know, owners who are not family members who could be, you know, have an impact. So lots of different rooms at the end of these little corridors that we have to, you know, make sure we're putting the right conversation in the right place. So fascinating challenge. So I know you're probably an amazing role model for women in family firms. It's a passion of mine, women contractors in particular. I love working with and seeing women who are taking over leadership roles in traditionally male-dominated industries like roofing, plumbing, or what have you. I think it's great. And I think it's great, the work you're doing. It might be challenging to find multi-generational women-led businesses, I imagine. But it's a niche, and you stand out. And so it's super special. What else should we be talking about, Nike?
We can talk a little bit more about the women and family business, female successes in particular. You know, like you mentioned, there are not many female-founded businesses in male-dominated areas, but they're also, the gender conversation in family firms is still, we've got a long way to go.
A long way.
A long way to go. A lot of daughters that I come across, and actually spouses, because typically the founder is a man. Do you see barriers, whether explicitly placed barriers or whether it's internal barriers? And this creates an issue because for so many reasons, right now we're seeing the greatest wealth transfers set to happen in a few years. And over 60% of that wealth will move to the hands of women.
Mm-hmm. But this is from baby boomers to
millennials.
Millennials. Okay.
Yes.
And most of it will move to women. That's
60% will move to women. But a lot of women in family enterprises are yet to find their voices,
right,
and yet to exercise their influence. And traditionally what has happened is even if they own the wealth, they pass it on to their brothers, their husbands, their fathers to invest the wealth for them or to make the decisions in the business for them. But women lead differently to men. And I'm a diversity champion. I'm pro-women, I'm pro-men. I'm pro the coming together of, you know, genders. Because we see things differently, and we do need to see things differently. It's the coming together of our various perspectives that forges strength and creates that diversity of thought. And right now, our world is laden with so many social challenges. This pandemic has still not gone away. Look at India. It's just completely heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Climate change, you know, poverty, income inequality, so many social issues. And typically when women make decisions, they think of communities and they think of like a wider ecosystem. So it's really quite sad that women are yet to find their voices in family enterprises. And I think it's upon us to really work with, you know, founders and families to help ladies find their voices and come to the table and participate. A lot of it is imposter syndrome, like, you know, this is a male dominated, you know, sphere. I don't really belong here. This has always been dad and the brothers or uncles talking about this. I don't really know. And women tend to have this gender confidence gap, even where they're equally as competent as men. They will question their capabilities. I know I really struggle. It's still continuous present. I struggle with imposter. But because I'm equipped with the data and the information, I'm like, okay, it's not just me. It's clearly there's something about the way we're wired up, that we're inclined this way. I'm able to kind of kick myself up the backside and do get stuff done, you know. But sometimes what ladies need is a coach that understands their perspective and can guide them on a one-on-one basis and teach them tools to help them overcome this gender confidence gap.
I think that's great. Nikki, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on my show. You are a dynamo, very well-spoken, come from a very interesting family business and entrepreneurial experience. I'm sure you have a lot to offer your clients. So you moved to Austin. You'll be here shortly. How do people get a hold of you, Nikki?
Oh, thank you so much, Jonathan, for having me. I've really enjoyed our conversation. I can be reached on my website, nikeanani.com. That's www.nikeanani.com. And my email address is there if you want to shoot me an email, or you can reach me on my social, which is also on my website.
Thanks so much. So another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show, this one featuring a second-generation entrepreneur who I'm sure has her own playbook for how to get family businesses together. Make sure to get a copy of my book, which has my playbook for how to scale up your family business if you're a next generation leader. Thanks for listening. Please share this episode with your friends, family, and colleagues. This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, the Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the goldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session.
Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.